Thanks for checking out Taste of Country Nights with Evan Paul on demand. This is a fun episode. We sat down with For King and Country, and these two were just a delight to have in the studio. Let's jump right into this interview. We're hanging out here with For King and Country. What's going on, guys?
You have both the king and the country.
Which one's which?
Which one do you think? Which one do you think's the king? You know what I'm saying?
You guys, unless you're watching, you can't see.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Come on. Don't be a diplomat. Just say it.
This is... I'm going to say Big Country.
Hey! Oh! It's the plaid. Hey, you're right. You win.
Okay, one for one, Evan. Why is the four lowercase?
Yeah, it was a style preference choice. When we launched as a band 12 years ago, our label sent through like a bunch of different designs. And for whatever reason, I love typeface and font styles, and so they just speak to me. And so some, for whatever reason, it was like, this is about King and Country. This is not about the four.
It's good.
Ironic because a lot of people, even our booking agents, like, hey, it's King Country here.
they just missed the four.
I did my homework. I was like, all right. So is it like four? It was good.
We're from Australia, but the British mantra, like when they were charging into battle hundreds of years ago, they would, like, if you ever see like a Revolutionary War type film or like Lion King, Zazu would be like, "For King and Country." Like,
I think Downton Abbey, they've got very much from the British side of things. Yeah,
that's right.
Tell me the story of the song "World on Fire."
World on Fire. Well, speaking of the British, we're actually over in the UK promoting a film that we were part of last year called Unsung Hero. And while we were over there, we had the chance to go to Oxford, the university, which I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, we're very hoity-toity. Very,
yeah,
felt very.
We spoke very proper.
Yeah, we felt very intelligent being over in Oxford. But anyway, we were taking a tour around. I mean, what's amazing about Oxford, if you haven't been, is that it's made up of like 28 universities or 28 colleges, and everyone has like a beautiful chapel. And the chapels, they're like, yeah, this one's the new one. It's 500 years old, and you're like, you know, you go to an average, you know, looking kind of college over there, and it's as old as anything that America has.
Thousand years old. Fascinating place.
So anyway, we're walking around. We come to this one little section in the road where there's a cobbled, like it's a cobbled street, just for like almost
kind
as big
a cobbled,
as this table.
Cobbled cross almost in the
middle. There's a cross, and I was like, well, it's obviously intentional that they didn't put asphalt over this section. So I said to someone, I was like, hey, what's up with that? You know, the cobbled street, and they were like, oh, the Oxford martyrs were martyred right here. And I was like, whoa, this got serious.
Okay.
And so sure enough, I go later and I look up the story of
Luke's
the Oxford martyrs.
Luke's a little bit of a research junkie.
Yeah, you know, but yeah, I've always been curious. Wikipedia is my friend. So I look up this story and there's two guys, Hugh Latimer and Nicholas Ridley. And obviously because of religious liberty, all sorts of different things. They were there and they were going to be burnt to the stake. And right before they lit that match, Hugh Latimer turns over to this other guy, Nicholas Ridley, and he says, I pray by the grace of God that we will light a candle in England that I pray shall never be put out.
Yeah.
And I was really like moved by that statement
because we
sing these songs when we're kids. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Everyone knows it.
Everybody. Yeah.
But my challenge, I think, for myself and for other people is that light getting brighter as we age? Is that light getting brighter as we mature? And that's what this song is.
And it's really the light. It's the light of love, right, Evan? It's the light of, like, it's easy to jump on a comment section or, you know, tout out a belief or an idea or whatnot. The song is really singing about our world, my world being on fire, like seeing just this great love exuding from each other, you know?
I like that, man. That's deep.
He's still thinking about it. You were like, oh, it's such a fun beat. It's so
this
whatever, but this is the story.
Yeah. What happened? Yeah. Okay, so where do you guys keep your Grammys?
Now we're getting to the deep stuff.
Yeah.
You know what's fascinating is, and I'm embarrassed to say, you know, Luke's put some in his kids' rooms, and they were used for various
They were a doorstopper at one point.
No. That's not. So I want, listen, I'm part of the Nashville Grammy board, and so I do not condone or respect or his decisions. But I will say now we have a little kind of management office in downtown Franklin, and there's four of them sitting in the
back. I mean, what do you do? Okay. Like, it always just feels, awards are a strange thing, right? Like, well, this year you're better than the other guys, you know?
Chris Martin said it well. He said, if you display your rewards, you're really recognizing that you're looking at the past, not looking into the future.
Dang. I mean, yeah, I can see that, but it's a Grammy.
I know.
It's not, you know, but a doorstop. Whew, okay.
That was Luke, by the way. That wasn't Joel.
Look, I just felt like, right. There's a little, let me back up just a little bit. There's a reason why. Not maybe the doorstop side, but I didn't, when I got them, they come in these like beautiful foam cases and like you pull out the Grammy. And I was like, man, here's the deal. Without my wife and the children, I don't have the perspective to do this well.
Yeah.
And so part of the reason why I wanted to put them in their room, it was just like, hey, you guys are the reason. You give me the courage. You give me the stories. You give me the life to live to be able to do something. And I was like, you know what? So you put them
good
in your room.
Good crisis management there. Way to swing back around on that. when you put out country songs, per se, is there any fear that the secular crowd is going to be upset? Like
you mean Christian?
Is that how you say that? The secular crowd?
I would say mainstream.
Okay.
I don't know. Secular sounds divisive to me somehow. Like, because look, the whole idea of Christianity to me, Evan, is it's an invitation.
Right.
Christianity, Jesus at the heart of it was a very inclusive man. Like, he's hanging out with all the troublemakers and the low lives and the rejects and like he would be, if he dropped into a lot of religious circles today, I think he would be very ridiculed probably. and so we've always taken a nod from the life of Jesus and going, man, this is a story we want to tell. We're Jesus lovers, but we want to invite people into the arena. So we see people from different religious perspectives, different beliefs, people that act, look, vote, think different. We're like, man, how cool is it? And sports matches to me are the same in a weird way that you have people. And as we isolate into these pockets of like belief systems and algorithms and we're not rubbing shoulders with each other as much. I feel like live concerts, church, sports matches are really important for people to come together and go, man, we're actually, let's celebrate something together. Let's celebrate God together. Let's celebrate our football team together. I was at the hockey match last night. My wife sang the national anthem. Side note, shout out. Let's celebrate the fact that we're alive. And that's what we try to create with these songs. And I don't think there's fear. I think there's conversations. We want to be thoughtful about what we're putting out into the world.
Well, like I had a buddy that did that does Christian radio on like Joy FM or
FM.
And he always told me like he had trouble as a host if he would talk about like American Idol, that people would call in and they would say like, how dare you talk about that on here, stuff like that. So I was talking with, have you heard of Ann Wilson? She was just in here. I was talking to Ann Wilson. She's crossing over, doing some country. I asked her the same thing. Like, is that a legitimate fear that there will be some fans? Because in today's world, some people are still political about it per se, where they're going to say, oh my gosh, they're going and I heard this song on the country station. Why? You know, and how do you deal with that? Do you just keep the train going?
I think at the end of the day, people want authenticity.
Yeah.
I think
especially
people want
country.
I think people want to know that you're just real. At the end of the day, I can't please everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can, like, I often say this about writing songs is like, look, I'm not a good enough songwriter to write songs about things that I don't care about. And I'm oftentimes writing songs to comfort my own soul. Now, when I write a song that comforts my own soul, I also realize there's millions and millions of other people going through very, very similar things as me.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, music starts with authenticity and what is real. At the end, man, if people are going to get upset about different things, I mean, they're going to get upset about different things. I mean, have you ever gotten emails because of something that you said? So it just happens. But if that's the thing that changes our callings in life, changes our purpose, and maybe hopefully does, you know, if it messes up our day too much, then we care probably just a little bit too much about what other people think.
And by the way, let's put it straight. One of the things that, I mean, we're both immigrants, right? We love this country because you can say the thing.
Yeah.
And so if it hits you funny, like we all get off the mark sometimes. If it hits you funny, put it forward. I agree with Luke. It can't crush your day, but it should. You've got a beeping over there. Is that okay?
Oh, it's all right. Okay. I thought I turned the power off, the audio off on that.
But if it crushes your day, you know, we all have our bad days. There's no doubt about it. But I think that the point of it is we've got a really cool ecosystem of like-minded people and creatives and mentors that and family. And we're not alone. It's not a Lone Ranger sport, you know.
That's good. Okay. What's the difference in performing for like crowds in the U.S. as opposed to other crowds?
It's massive.
The difference is this. America is a little bit spoiled because there's just so much concert industry.
Okay.
That makes sense. You've got, I mean, how many shows that happened this week?
Oh, yeah,
You know what I'm saying?
Particularly like, Nashville, here, right?
And in Nashville, you go to Broadway, there's all shows day, all day. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're playing at 9 a.m.
Yeah,
you know?
You got Posty showing up at his bar.
People are nuts.
But you go to where we're from. I'm originally Australia. I mean, when we go back there, it's like people thank us for, it feels like for weeks because they're like, we don't get many shows back here.
We did a tour last year there and it was.
And it's the same in Europe.
It's kind of euphoric.
You know, you don't get as much. All right. Okay. And when I say as much, you don't get as much American, you know, kind of based artists going to Europe or to Australia or around the world because America's just such a big place. You don't really actually have to leave if you don't want to when it comes to music. So when we travel internationally, the amount of gratitude and the enthusiasm in the room is because, you know, in America, a lot of people kind of sit back and they have the persona of impress me.
You go
overseas and they're just amped. They're just all
and
out.
At the same time, just to step in the gap for my brother, we love touring in America. It's our bread and butter. But it's like anything in life. The more you know, the more chocolate you have, the less you might appreciate it.
Well, what's the difference in like truck stop gas stations in America?
Oh, this
overseas?
Is good. Now we're getting into the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
Have you traveled much?
Not out of a country.
Really?
Through America a lot.
Yeah. So it's a whole different game.
Good or bad.
We call them fuel stations or petrol stations.
Okay.
International petrol stations are like impressive.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very nice.
Okay.
But some of the trucks some of the truck stops here are like villages.
So like Buc-ee's or something.
But
here
they feel a little bit
like
average.
I went to Buc-ee's the other day
for the first time. Compared to your guys.
No, okay. Buc-ee's is
massive. I mean, it's just
Buc-ee's is the greatest petrol station on earth.
I think.
You've got everyone beat on that one, right?
Buc-ee's is special.
Okay, they don't have them overseas?
No, not quite like that. Most things overseas are a little smaller.
Okay.
Everything's smaller. The cars are smaller. Yeah. The roads are smaller.
The people are smaller.
I'll say it.
I'm not going to say that.
I got you. What do you guys require backstage when you're on tour?
Green M&Ms.
Yeah, that's the one.
No. Did you hear how that story originated, by the way, the green M&Ms?
No.
I think it was Rolling Stone. And they wanted to make sure that people were paying attention to the – for those of you who don't know, they call it a rider, which is basically an advanced document that states what you need, everything from catering to the venue to the personnel. And they would put green M&Ms in because at the time there were no actual green M&Ms unless you picked them out of the pack. So you had to – they put it in the rider so that –
Someone had to
go and pick. Okay, and if they showed up at the dressing room and they were not the green M&Ms exclusively, they weren't paying attention.
Wow.
We are not that fussy.
No. You know, one of the things is, it's just become a thing for whatever reason.
Seaweed snacks.
Dried mangoes.
Dried
mangoes.
Okay.
Man, the thing is, everything on the road, you got to eat healthy.
Yeah.
You know, because you know, you're in these arenas. You're not getting a lot of vitamin D. you're in different places. You're not sleeping a lot because you get into bed late. So food is actually becomes really important.
Dried mango is good.
Yeah, good.
I don't know about the seafood. What is it?
Yeah, seaweed, like seaweed snacks. You guys, you listeners know seaweed snacks, right?
Yeah, tell Evan. The wasabi ones.
The wasabi ones seaweed snacks. Evan is asking for you to send him.
Yes. He doesn't want emails, wasabi, but he wants wasabi seaweed snacks.
Cheeseburgers.
America.
Do your parents ever name drop to help you, to help themselves get things done faster? I'll give you an example. Brothers Osborne were in here. They spoke about their mom is always at the hardware store and is like promising the lighting guy tickets so he'll get her lights, you know.
I think it would be fair. Well, our dad certainly more so than our
dad is a dadager.
Okay. Yeah.
We work with our dad, okay. So he's talking about this stuff all the time,
and he literally will take like DVDs or CDs to like he'll keep them in the car. So if he goes on a business trip, he'll have one bag that's for his clothes, and then the other bag he'll just shove a bunch of CDs. I mean, no one even has CD players anymore. My sons are in a band.
Okay,
and he'll,
this is a true story. So about 3 months ago, a mutual friend of Joel and I's came up and was like, "Hey, so I just got a friend from I just had a friend text me from the park and said, hey, do you know this? There's a strange old man who said, will you come to the back of my car I've got a CD for you?"
Yes.
And it was, "What about CDs?"
It's like a creepy ice cream man version, you know?
And then come with a lollipop.
And the friend was like, I knew exactly who it was when she was like,
"Oh my gosh, that's great."
They're very proud in their own way.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Before I get into, I want to get into what you're doing with the Drummer Boy Christmas special. Yeah. One more quick goof one. What did you guys beef about most growing up?
Sports.
Yeah, we didn't get along very well growing up. So we're 2 of 7 kids, and we're not Catholic.
A lot going on.
Yeah, a lot going on. Yeah, I'm the middle child. Luke's just under me, but he grew up taller than me. He was a better sportsman than me. We have 5 boys, and so we had a little like mini sports team.
And in Australia, we don't... But there's not that many people in Australia, so sports and like the Olympics a big deal. The culture of sports in Australia is it's like universal. Everyone loves to play sports. So for us growing up, it was who could beat who at what age.
Oh,
almost.
And you were just and running.
We were. So Luke got better than me, so I resented him for it. And actually, interestingly enough, it was sports that kind of brought us together because he's 6'4". You can't hear that, but
big
he
boy,
is.
Yeah.
So he tore his ACL. That's right. Big country. What was it? The first game,
my junior year of high school. Couldn't believe it.
And speaking of our parents, Dad had been saying, "Hey, I think you guys should like collaborate together because Dad is in the kind of business side of music." And I was like, "I don't know." And it was actually when he had torn his ACL, and sort of his hopes for this basketball season or even career were dashed. That I was like, "Hey, why don't we just try collaborating on some music together?" And here we are.
Boom, that's awesome.
Taste Worked of country. We've really done it, everyone.
That's awesome. Yeah. That is, okay. I want to talk about the Drummer Boy Christmas show. Give me some details about that. How'd you pick the cities, and what can we expect?
Well, this year, so we took off touring most of this year, actually all of this year, and this will be the only tour that we're doing. We went into the studio kind of February of this year to kind of write and record a new record, which is a part of World on Fire. And then we're working on some film. We kind of do some film projects as well. And so this year we thought, okay, we've done the big arena, tours, and we've always enjoyed those at Christmas time. But we were like, what if we shrink it down and make some of these, what are the biggest theaters in all of America? And what if we went into those to make it just to feel like a little bit more of an intimate, special night? And so in some cases, the cities are based off of how big are the theaters because, our show for 1,500 or 2,000, we can't quite get all the equipment in, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And so you're picking different cities based off of, obviously, the desire of the people wanting us to come, but also just the size of the theaters. We're at the Grand Ole Opry for
five nights. It's the longest, speaking of Nashville, it's the longest residency that the Opry's ever done in their 100 years.
It's crazy.
5 nights.
Wow. And you've guys played there before?
We have played there every year for...
Yeah, we've kind of been building. So a little before the pandemic, we started with just like we did a show, a Christmas show there. And then because we live in Nashville, at the end of every Christmas tour, even if it's an arena tour, we'll finish at the Opry. Wow. And it kind of becomes this sort of like homecoming, hometown show, last concerts of the year. And so it's gone, you know, it was 1 to 2 to 3 and now 4 and that's 5.
Do you pick your dressing room at the Opry? And if so, what's your favorite?
I think they assign it for us. Is it the
I really like the one that's right in the corner there, right as you come off stage right. It's right in the corner.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did a thing there one time and I got to be in a 4. Or,
there you go.
It was like the American Pride one or something. I don't know. I was walking around checking all of them. The popcorn, did you get the popcorn?
I didn't know about popcorn.
Okay, the kids, yes, because in the other little open green room, they've always got the popcorn.
Kids, my 6-year-old. Yeah.
I will say this:
nuts.
We need to learn this, Evan, because Luke and I are actually going to do an Opry tour.
We're doing. We're going to be the guides.
We're the tour guides.
Yeah. Oh,
so if you would like to come and learn about the Opry,
we may have to.
You are welcome.
We may have to get on Wikipedia and research a little bit more.
Sure, the popcorn says for real. It's been the same person that makes it for all these years.
I'll tell you this. This is a fun one. I don't know if it's number 4, but my wife just made her Opry debut. She's a Latin country artist, and this was a couple of weeks ago. Her name's Mariah, and it's really sweet. They own parking spot, and they put you in a very specific. Dressing room right on the corner there as you come in so that everyone passes you, they say hi to you as you go in. And they've got all these quotes, you know, Brad Paisley and all the rest of it. And you turn around, you got a Taylor Swift quote in the upper on top of the door there. And it was just a really, we've been, like Luke said, we've probably played the Opry between award shows and whatnot, almost probably
more than
30
place,
times.
Yeah.
So more than almost any other venue in the world. But it was really beautiful seeing it from a different.
Well, and then they have a parking spot
designated
sign, and then you get to take that sign.
You
home
take the
you.
Sign home. Yeah. Wow,
it's really
pretty
special.
Detail
it's a really
right
cool
there.
Little thing. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I opened the curtain that night.
Wow, yeah. With the thing.
Yeah, like, but no, it's just a button.
It's a button.
It's a button.
It's all right.
Technology, bro.
Is the parking spot sign a doorstop?
Look what he's done. Look what he's
never.
Done. He wasn't
That's
born
Luke,
yesterday, this guy. Yeah. He wasn't born yesterday.
I want a couple of the duos in country music. I want to see who you guys think you could take in an arm wrestling match. We have Dan and Shay.
I think we could take Dan, not Shay.
Yeah, yeah. Shay is intimidating.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
What about Maddie and Tay?
I think we could take them. Yes. We actually, you know,
we know them.
Enough,
we know
we
them really
them.
Well, yeah.
One of the guys that we write with a lot is married to Tay.
You know what? We'd let sweet Tay Tay take it, though.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
Okay. What about Brothers Osborne? They're brothers.
They scare me a bit too.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
They're
kind of
tough.
Yeah. They're
right?
Tough dudes.
Yeah, tough dudes.
I'm afraid if I beat them, they just might punch me in the nose or something.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, you've got this one. You got this one.
And what's next for you guys? Do you know an exact date of the album or movie?
We can't say.
Okay, great.
Can't say,
but
yeah.
We can talk about the Christmas tour,
I
and we can
understand.
Talk about world. We can talk about World on Fire till we're blue in the face.
All right,
you
the
know?
Album will be out before 2029.
That's a good way to do it.
Thank you.
That's exactly right.
Or I could even limit it and say it will be out sometime in 2026.
Well, here we go.
Hey,
if you hadn't have said that, you would never got to 2026.
Right. You've heard it here first, everyone.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming by. This was fun.
Thanks,
love
appreciate
it, man.
You.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
All right, let's bring in Billy Dukes to talk about this interview. This was a lot of fun for me. These guys were a challenge for me to interview just because I didn't know too much about them coming into it.
Yeah, a little out of genre, which I think is great for this time of year, given they have a Christmas tour that they're talking about. But also, just good dudes, right? I mean, I've been wanting to chat with these guys for a long time, so it was cool to finally get them on our podcast.
Yeah, and I've never interviewed, like, Pentatonix or whatever, but I have to, like, I'd have to compare to that. Like, I don't know. These guys felt like their SAT scores were, like, way too high to be making music, if that makes sense. Like, these guys were in the room. Like, I was trying to hang with them.
Do you get that from time to time? Like, when you feel like you're interviewing someone who is just outclassing you? Like, you can't bring your normal questions? I get that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
I remember once I interviewed, have you ever heard of Bela Fleck, a bluegrass guy?
I don't think so.
He's been around for a long, long, long time. Kind of one of those Grammy-winning kind of guys, super talented musician, big in bluegrass, and I interviewed him once. And I was totally outclassed, and he put up with me for like 10 or 15 minutes, and then he's just like, all right, I got to get going.
Do you think maybe it has something to do with the Grammys? Like, I feel like once you're talking to an artist that's won Grammys, maybe that's it. I'm kind of like, I feel like I'm just like, nah, I shouldn't be interviewing this person.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, if Alison Krauss ever really came through, like, I mean, I would be all kinds of nervous to ask. Like, you're going to ask Alison Krauss her tour writer? I mean, maybe.
Right. Hey, Alison. Yeah, have you ever been punched in the face? Right. Yeah, you have to class it up a little bit. You gotta talk about, you know, wine and, you know, who is the most elegant gown, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're pulling out all your 10-cent words, like you're using the thesaurus to prepare the questions.
Yes.
Now, all this said, these guys, they use their Grammys at doorstoppers. So, clearly, pretty normal, everyday kind of dudes.
Yeah, I figured that out pretty quick when they started talking about that. I thought that was a hilariously relatable story. Relatable, in the, not in the sense of the Grammy, but like, you know, I feel like most people, if you were like a employee of the month and you got like a plaque and you brought it home, I feel like it would end up being a kid's doorstopper or something. You know, nobody really respects the trophies anymore.
I'm not sure we've ever gotten the answer that they gave when you asked about the difference between performing in the United States and their home country, because they made it clear that there's just so much more gratitude in countries that don't have as much music as we do in America, and especially in Nashville, where we're just so spoiled with music. When we see a great show, we're like, oh, ho-hum.
Yeah, I do feel like that, and I think when Chase Matthew came in and he was talking about touring with Keith Urban, and he was saying that Keith Urban's even more famous in Australia when he goes back home, that kind of tipped me off a little bit. I wonder if, you know, us here in America are just we're oversaturated, you know, but then when it comes to like, I do feel, though, that country music is very good about hitting all the small towns. You know, you might have, like, Tate McRae or whoever's the pop artist go into, like, Atlanta, and then you might have, like, you know, I was going to say Morgan Wallen, but probably not. But, you know, you'd have, like, a Luke Combs playing not Luke Combs, but someone playing on the outskirts. You know, they go to the small towns, so I think there's still that, you know?
Is there an artist that, like, you would love to see play in Europe or, you know, any of those, you know, Africa or Australia? Just an artist who we've talked to, because we've talked to a lot of artists that have some success internationally. Like, who in your mind do you just want to see it? You want to see the deal of what that energy's like?
I think Dan and Che. I think based off what we've heard about the European stuff, I think they really appreciate, like, power vocals and strong lyrics, and I feel like Dan and Che would be interesting. You know, I think it would be different. You know, more so than like a Kit Moore, who has mass success overseas as well. You know, he doesn't even know why he's successful overseas, so it's hard to really call it.
That's the show I want to see. I want to see the Kit Moore show in South Africa, like he does those shows.
Yeah, I bet it's wild.
Yeah, because they're not getting any country music down there. Like, when he comes, he's like Elvis. I mean, the Beatles.
Show. Yeah, right. They probably go nuts. Yeah. And we spoke to him about that. He was telling us how they, like, fill arenas and stuff down there, and he has, like, no clue what happened, you know. And, yeah, I think it's the old – it was the same in radio back in the day. It was like – like when I worked in like a Philadelphia or a Detroit radio station, whenever the radio station would go on location far, far away, like to the ends of our signal, people would freak out more because the station would never be out there. So, yeah, I equate that, you know, to, you know, when they come through the small towns, everyone's going to go nuts. But, yeah, in America, like you said, we're just oversaturated.
I do appreciate that we talked about having to ask serious questions or more dignified questions of these artists, but then you bookended the conversation with explain the lowercase f in four King Country, and then the other bookend was who could you beat in an arm wrestling match? So maybe...
Yeah, once I got them loose, I had to like loosen it up a little bit. I can't stay that. Yeah, I can't. I'm not the guy you want at the dinner table for that. You know,
you got to bring them into us. You know what's funny though is you ask about the lowercase f, and like different bands do this, and this is sort of a pet peeve of mine. They try to stylize their name, or they want you to write it like crazy ways, like Pink, the artist Pink, instead of an I, she has an X. I don't do any of it. Like at Taste of Country, like we don't do, aside from like Kiss, like grandfathered in bands, I'm not writing Hardy in all caps, lower caps, this and that. Like you get
Dang,
what you get.
Man. Like, that's, oh man, you're going to upset some people with that. I mean.
Oh yeah. We used to get it all the time. People would email, oh, well, you know, it's supposed to be all caps and low cash. Dude, my website's going to look like a. Like a what's it called? Like a ransom letter with all the different fonts and like stylizations. Like, no, I'm sorry.
Oh man, I mean, you know, I think that people most for King of Country, I wonder if most people just think it's a typo. You know,
that's right.
Someone forgot to hold down shift when they hit the F. But they did it for everything else. That's what I thought it was. But,
yeah,
you know, marketing is marketing, man. But you're not going to get through to Billy Dukes, that's for sure.
Yeah. what do you got going on for Christmas? You getting out of town for Christmas?
Yeah, going out of town for Christmas to the wife's family in New Jersey. Yeah, and we're going to road trip it from Nashville all the way 12 hours, baby. Okay. What about you?
I got 12 hours on the schedule, too. I'm going to northern Michigan for my wife's dad. He's got a little plot of land there. The kids will run around in the snow. Then we're coming back down to lower Michigan to celebrate with my family and then back home. It's going to be about a 2,000-mile turnaround, and I just did it a week ago. So
I know.
Like
oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say Thanksgiving. Okay.
No, it was a week or two after Thanksgiving, but it's a long drive. I don't know.
Nice, though. Well, here's the thing.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was going to wrap it up using your long drive. I was going to say, you know, here's the thing. If you're on a long drive, every once in a while, click on over to our podcast. Check out a new interview with a different artist that's up there. And, you know, give us a like and a subscribe and all that. And we appreciate you hanging out, spending some time with us here on Taste of Country Nights on Demand.